Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Welcome to Justin Hawkins Rides Again, the podcast. This week I spoke with rock star Michael Starr. If you don't know who he is, Michael Starr is the lead singer of the glam metal band Steel Panther. We spoke about what life as a rock star and lead singer is like in the music industry. He tells me about the advice he wishes he'd received earlier in his career, and he discusses how he deals with life on and off stage. And there's also a lot of great stories and anecdotes mixed in. I hope you enjoy it. Please, regard. No, écoute. That's it. No. Good day to you, one and all. It is I, Justin Hawkins, and this is Justin Hawkins Rides Again. Today, I'm talking to Michael Starr. He's the lead singer from Steel Panther. He's a dear friend, and we've actually collaborated in the past, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Performed live on some of the, well, the most illustrious stages.
That's a really big word. What you're trying to say is like really big shows, right?
Big shows with lots of people looking at us singing. Yeah. I've performed with you, with your band, and you've performed with my band. On the same day, actually.
Yeah, same day. And we also performed together in Vegas. We performed in London together. We performed, God, man, wherever you're at, you perform with us.
We did South by Southwest, didn't we, one year?
Yes.
Because you guys were doing that.
Back in 2010.
Was that? Oh, my God, was it?
Yeah. That's how old we are now.
Yeah, we're pretty old. All right, so I've got loads to talk to you about, but I'm going to do the theme tune. Do you know the theme tune?
I'm ready to hear it, though.
Justin Hawkins rides again. I always put that little bit of wobble on at the end.
Yeah, I like that.
Sounds lovely,
like,
doesn't it? It's nice.
Actually, I did know your jingle. I just forgot what it was.
Yeah, you didn't see it as a jingle. You probably just, you know, it's become hue in the soundtrack of your everyday life now.
Yeah, well, it's just become such a really big influence on everybody now. So,
well, it's a standard. So
it's a standard tune now. Sing it before all sports games.
Yeah, absolutely. What are all those guitars behind you? Are they yours?
Actually, no. It's a good friend of mine. Actually, him and I co-write some songs together, you know, working on music together. And this is his studio in Louisville. We did a show in Columbus, Ohio last night. They came out to the show, and we just drove back here to his pad. And he's also my dentist, so he's going to replace a crown on my mouth. He does Botox and some butt lifting, too, as well. So I'm excited for that.
So the complete set of cosmetic services, really.
Yeah, and not only that, there's plenty of guitars here to get in trouble with. Like this Gibson custom one plays so great. It's amazing.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really nice. And they're new strings, which we're not used to. We have to boil our strings because we don't make that much money.
Yeah, my strings are always dead. But it makes you play harder. And it
really does. Really does. Unless the D string breaks, then you got to replace it. But it's a really nice place. There's plenty of food here, and they have water and drinks. And the lighting is amazing. It takes years off my face.
You really do look super young. But I wondered if that was a recent addition of Botox, or would that be?
No, this is just the same old Botox I've had since 91.
Yeah.
Yep. But I can lift my eyebrows up. I have actor's Botox. Uh-huh. So actor's Botox, you don't want to lose your expression when you're acting.
Yeah.
So you have to have some sort of movement. So no, I do have movement though, Justin. Look, I can lift my eyebrows.
I can see it now. Yeah, that's really good actually. Well, I've noticed it when you sing as well. When you hit the high notes, I see that one of your eyebrows is visually, you know, you can detect movement from the front row, you know.
Well, I don't know if you noticed, but there's a technique that I learned early on in my singing career that if I'm a little bit flat, if I lift my eyebrows up, it will bring me right into the pitch. So that's why I don't get too much Botox, because I'll be flat all the time.
And if you don't have enough Botox, you're probably sharp, which actually sounds a bit more exciting, to be honest. Flat makes you sound tired. Sharp, I don't know, it creates a dissonance and your vocal cuts through a bit more. So I wouldn't put any around here.
Well, Satchel calls me Flarp.
Ah, because you're flat and sharp, but never...
Yeah, at
never.
The same time. So it's pretty cool because I kind of oscillate in between the two and just touch the root note every now and then just to get a more sexy vibe.
Yeah, so the overall perception is that you're at the note, but if you analyze it, then yeah, that's good. That's
yeah, see, this is the thing about singing. People do overanalyze it, and I'm come from the school of just sing. You know, just sing the best you can. If you can do it, good. And whatever you can't sing, just reroute it lower. It's not a big deal. Yeah. It's not the end of the world if you can't hit a note that you recorded 20 years ago.
No. I think what our sound man noticed when you came to sing with us was how unbelievably loud your voice is. Has your sound man ever mentioned that to you?
Actually, you know, there's been a few singers that have mentioned that to me, but I seem to be surrounded by people who sing louder than me. I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's because of, I don't know. Maybe, you know, it's probably the circumstances of what we were doing at that time because it was Hellfest. I was in a white t-shirt and camel shorts, which is not heavy metal. And I was pumped up. I was excited to be out there. So I was probably singing more probably louder than I normally would sing.
Or I wondered if it was to do with, because, you know, when people talk about singing, they talk about the directional, the way you sort of perceive the voice coming out of your head. I wonder if you've just got this laser focus where it goes straight down the capsule of your SM58 and then you're properly...
I don't know. It's kind of... I'm sure you experience this and other singers may. Every now and then you hit that spot where you're singing correctly, the throat's not swollen or the vocal cords not swollen, everything's firing on all cylinders and you're getting these notes that are just, they trick you. You think, oh, I'm a great singer. Because then the next night you realize, maybe I'm not, you know?
Yeah, but isn't that what makes it fun though? Isn't that part of the
because when everything's working and everything's flowing and the crowd's actually responding to you and they like you, it's a great feeling. And it doesn't happen all the time. You know, we did a tour opening up for Judas Priest for like 10 weeks and we were getting shit thrown at us because, you know, we're Steel Panther and we're, you know how we are. And but you know, it definitely built up a callus for us to realize that, you know what, when you go out there, no matter what's going on, you still got to go out and give it your all, right? And try to win the crowd over. But that doesn't mean you're going to sing great. That just means you're going to win the crowd over.
Yeah, that's it. By any means necessary. I think what I noticed about you guys is there's a lot of stuff, when you see like a Steel Panther show, there's stuff on tracks and there's a temptation to think, well, okay, how much of it is actually being played? But when I came out and I had like my own sort of custom, your monitor guy was really generous with me with time wise and set me up with a good mix, and I could hear what Satchel was doing, and what Styx was up to, and obviously I had your voice really loud in there, and the stuff that's actually happening live is so well done, like it's really great playing and singing, and I think that like I reckon there's probably a little bit of sort of, because the extra elements that you have that's pre-recorded, I think there's probably a temptation for people to reject you as not the real thing. But actually what you're doing is really accomplished. And I was so impressed when I was listening to that. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, thanks. You know, we try to make the tracks subtle. So you're kind of, you hear them almost subliminally. Like you expect them to be there anyways. So if you hear just a little taste of the rhythm guitar and a little taste, like some of the choruses are doubled and I'll sing over them. So it gives that double effect, and then some there's just blatant cheaters in there where I just lip sync to, and I'm not ashamed of that, man. But all joking aside, it just enhances the whole live experience. And we truly thought about, okay, let's bring a keyboard player out that way they can hit one note during a chorus and play the shaker and do all that, and then we thought, well, that's just going to take out of our bottom line. So we just hired a multi-track and just put that on there. It was way cheaper. No per diems.
Yeah, absolutely. And no opinions as well, which is another great advantage to it.
You know what? That's really where it boils down to. No, we don't need another opinion in the band.
Yeah. I remember I saw you guys playing, I came to see you at Wembley and you were supporting ZZ Top. When was that?
Yeah.
Now? Was that 2000?
Oh, God. That was probably 2011, maybe? 2012? Yeah.
And you did, it was when you did a cover of, what's that Journey song that was huge?
Oh, Don't Stop Believing.
Yeah, yeah. So you're doing that. And I remember the keyboard part started, and a few people were looking around, where's that coming from? And then you just
we always say it's our monitor guy.
No, you shouted, our keyboard player's behind the amps because he's fat.
Yeah. He's either fat or he's ugly, one or the other. Or he lost his hair. He can't be on the stage.
I mean, it was in the days before that would be considered. I mean, yeah, no, that's the other thing.
We would have got cancelled.
I mean, not fat shaming. You're not allowed to do that anymore. That's gone.
Yeah, I know. I got violated. Or not violated. I wish I got violated.
Chance to be a fine thing.
I got flagged on a few posts that I've done because I said the word fat, and you know I didn't mean it in a derogatory way. I just meant it that fat chicks suck the best dick, and I guess they got offended by that and took it down.
Who got offended by it?
Instagram.
Oh, okay. I wondered if you were talking about fat people being offended by it or...
No, man. We have a song called Fat Girl, for Christ's sake. You know what I tried to do? I thought, all right, I'm going to create some new content. I'm going to recite the lyrics to our song, Fat Girl. And I did a video of me reciting in my hotel room because I was bored. I already jacked off. There was nothing else to do. And I did the video. I posted it, and it got flagged.
Oh, my God. Flagged by the actual organization, Instagram, you're saying?
Pardon me?
Did you say it's flagged by the actual organization, Instagram? I thought not the community of Instagrammers, but the actual platform itself.
Yeah, the platform itself, yeah. Oh, and they demonetized me for 90 days.
Oh, no.
And what am I going to do without that $20?
Oh, my God. That's awful.
But, you know, funny story about that Don't Stop Believing song. That was a song that was in our cover set when we were a cover band. And we did it all the time, and it was a big fan favorite for all the young college girls, so we played it. And then when we did our first record, the label was like looking for other things that they could get on the radio, and like, go record Don't Stop Believing. We're like, okay. So we went and recorded it, and then they wanted us to play it at that show and do an EK, like a quick little video promo for it.
That's called again? There's an E, you nearly said it then.
EGK or EKG?
EKP, wasn't it? Something EPK.
EPK,
that's
thank
it.
You.
Yeah. And what does that stand EK- for again? Electronic Press Kit, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right, and it's supposed to blow the band up, and boy, it sure didn't do anything, but it was fun to put out.
Yeah. When I first met you, you were doing the residencies. Mm-hmm. One of them, well, what was the one in LA again? That was.
Well, there were several. So we started out at the Viper Room for like 4 years. Then we went to the Roxy for 2, and then we went to the Key Club for 5.
Okay, so I think Key Club is when I met you.
Yeah, that's when you came. Is that when you traveled to Vegas with us too as well?
Yeah, yeah, it was, yeah.
And then you were out another time doing your Hot Leg band. Yeah. And we all came to see at the old Viper Room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Wow.
Good times.
But what I was going to ask you was, when you're doing like a Vegas residency, and I've never had the, I mean, I've only ever done that with you as a one-off kind of thing. I've always imagined that that's like super lucrative because you don't really need, what are your overheads with a thing like that? You just need to get there, don't you?
Yeah, you just get there and all the gear and drums are all rented and they're all there for you and the staging's there, all the lights are there. You got a light guy, a sound guy, everything you need. And it's cool and you do get paid a lot. And we had that weekly there. We were there every Friday and Saturday for like 7 years, right? But I'll tell you, it's what we ended up calling the Velvet Coffin. It's the most amazing gig you could ever, fruit trays and meat trays and all the food comps. Yeah, everything you could ever dream for, but there's no growth. It only goes so far, and that's it.
Because I felt like for you guys, it was like you're all driving fancy cars already, you know. You're all pretty comfy. You're doing these, I mean, it's a little bit like sex work, isn't it? Because I think once you get used to doing that and having that income, you think, oh, yeah, I'll just do it for a little while. And then it's like you don't really want to stop doing it because...
I'll tell you, Justin, the only thing that income really helped do is keep Steel Panther together because we were fighting all the time, but we all got invested in our outside lives outside of the band. And we're like, we need to make this shit work if we want to keep making this money. Yeah. And so we figured out a way to live comfortably together and learn to like actually like become real friends, like for real, you know, not just band buddies that show up 10 minutes before the gig, do a show and then fight afterwards. That's no way to live.
Yeah. Okay. But I think it must have been a sacrifice though to sort of put that to one side and do the world touring.
Oh my God. That was the biggest transition for us. And it took many years because our record came out in 2009. And I remember the label sent over a tour proposal for us to go to the UK. I'm like, awesome. Love to go. How much does it pay? They're like, nothing. As a matter of fact, we're going to need to support it and you'll need to pay us back for it. And we're like, fuck it. We're not doing it. And they're like, you got to do it, right? So we did. We decided at that point we're going to invest in ourselves because – like I said, Vegas is great, but it only goes so far. And the weekly shows in LA and San Diego are great, but they only go so far. And so we took, you know, I think it was like 3 weeks off from our weekly shows, which was, for us, it was our income. So, you know, we had to invest in ourselves and then come back. And every time we would do that and come back, the show's attendance would kind of go down because we weren't doing it every week and it wasn't a hangout anymore. Yeah. And then eventually after our second record came out, we had to make the choice just to cut the umbilical cord and just go for it. Mm-hmm. And once we did that, it was really scary because monetarily we weren't really making the money we were used to making. And but we were playing all over the world and we were playing in front of people that loved our music. It was the best feeling ever. You know, it was almost like the feeling that we had growing as a cover band was amazing. You know, going to Viper Room, the Roxy, the Key Club, the House of Blues. Each venue was bigger and paid more money, and it was really exciting. And, you know, it kind of just kind of went like this. And then we got signed, and then we started this new chapter of our career, and it's basically doing the same thing, but all over the world. So it was really a super exciting time for us. Like, I think my hair even grew longer than it's ever grown.
It definitely did. It's one of the things I noticed about that transition, actually. But oh, it must have been really cool. Because when you, the other thing about doing the worldwide touring and investing in yourself is the original material as well, isn't it? Like,
yeah. I mean, we didn't really, there was a turning point where we were doing a show in Vancouver and we were backstage trying to write set lists. We're like, okay, what do we do? Do we play just our songs or we do covers? We didn't know because we were so used to being a cover band. So we get out there and we start playing Bon Jovi and people start booing us. And we're like, okay, this is weird, man. So we just said, you guys don't want to hear covers. You want to hear our stuff? They're like, yeah, that's why we're here. And that really kind of started our transition into basically an original band, which is, it's like taking the training wheels off and really going on your own. And it's such a great feeling to really, to be able to accomplish what we've accomplished. We don't take it for granted. And it's so exciting. And it still is to this day. Even as we age like cheese.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you first started doing that stuff, I was really pleased to see the UK embrace you the way it did. It got huge, didn't it, in England, I think, right? You were doing arenas and stuff. I wondered if there was a particular fondness from the UK crowd that you noticed, because I felt like...
Oh my, yes. You know it's true. I'll never forget. Ever forget. And you came down and sang with us, too. I forget the name. It was a name of a club. It was a
free
number.
Something, wasn't it? Oh, free
369 or something.
369s. That was it. Yeah, something like that.
But it held like 500 people, and it was sold out. And it was so exciting. And then you got up and sang with us. We did Thing Called Love, and then Party All Day.
Yeah,
it was great. Yeah, man. And then we did the Download Festival, which was fucking mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Yep. I remember Andy Copping was our guy who brought us over and invested in us and took a chance with us, and it panned out really well for us, especially at the Download Festival. There were people singing all our songs. It was crazy.
If somebody's going to champion you from that promotional end, you need it to be at Andy Copping, because then he's going to get you on Download. It's his festival, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's amazing that he was there for you guys, because it's the ideal fit.
He still is. He still books us. Yeah. I remember we were doing a Def Leppard Motley Crue tour, and Motley Crue didn't want us on the tour, but Andy said, no, they're going to be on the tour, and that's the end of it. And we were on it.
Do you have any idea why? Is it, did one of you
just play? Just because Nicky had 6 AM had just put out a new record, and he wanted to have them open up the show.
So he wanted to play twice?
Yeah. He loves playing, I guess.
Yeah, he must really enjoy it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got some questions that, based on stuff that I've been talking about recently, and I wondered if you'd like to share your perspective. What do you think are the biggest pitfalls of the music trade? What's the thing that you reckon, if like a young Michael Starr came up to you, what would be your cautionary tale?
Okay, here's a cautionary tale, and I'll never forget who told me this. His name was Gene Simmons, and I'll never forget. Gene Simmons actually was, Gene and Paul were very instrumental in helping us in the early days. And we tried to do a TV show with him, and, you know, we've done a lot of things with him. But anyways, the reason I bring that up is because one thing he told me, he said, don't give away your publishing, no matter what.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Right? You think everybody should know that, right?
Yeah.
This guy didn't. So I was like, okay, never give away my publishing. Well, we ended up doing that several times. And that's why we have so many different names, is because we did so many shitty deals with people that were one-sided for them. And the only way for us to get out of them was to change our name from Metal Shop to Metal School. And then from Metal School to Danger Kitty, then Steel Panther. Because by the time we got to Steel Panther, we figured out what not to do. Don't give your publishing away, and don't let anybody take a percentage of your money.
Okay, so you have to explain that to me. How did you, what, when you say publishing, you're talking about songwriting money?
Yeah, and TV stuff. TV's too, as well. Because we were doing, you know, we're doing commercials and doing jingles and shit, and they basically had us in a 360 deal. So they take 20% of everything we do.
Okay.
Including the publishing.
Right.
And the SAG royalties.
But presumably they represent you in all those different areas as well, though, right? So they're providing some sort of help with your merchandise and stuff.
Well, here's the thing. Once a band starts rolling, the service they provide is already in place. So you're paying them for taking you on and then utilizing their particular, like you would call it a Rolodex back in the day, but you know, you take advantage of what they've already established for themselves. But after a while,
people who are connected, aren't you? You're talking about
After a while, if a band starts getting popularity, the phone starts ringing. All they're doing is basically answering the phone. So you have to just don't give away your publishing.
The publishing, I just can't believe anyone would take it in the first place. Don't you have to be in the room with somebody when they're writing a song for that to be an issue?
Are they named
as writers on stuff or what?
Well, we had a manager. His name was Paul Geary. He played drums in a band called Extreme. Yeah. And I remember I didn't know. And he's a super sweet guy, nice guy. I called him. I go, hey, dude, am I supposed to be giving you my publishing? He goes, no, unless you want to. If you want to, you can. It'd be really nice. But no, you don't have to do that. And I just didn't know any better. You know, I was a newbie.
Yeah. That sounds unbelievably naive, if you don't mind me saying so.
Well, dude, look at me. I'm a blonde-haired singer, Christ's sake.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel like one of the things that we always used to say at the beginning of our thing was like, the most important thing is to get a really good manager. But before you can actually sign with a really good manager, you got to make sure you got a really good lawyer. And then the lawyer says, the catchphrase, my favourite catchphrase, is you've got to protect yourself from failure, but you've got to be very vigilant with protecting yourself from success. Because at that point, you can lose a lot of money if you've made decisions like giving your publishing to somebody else.
Right. And then, or you just keep giving them 20% of your shows, you know? I mean, I remember we signed a deal with a movie producer, and he said, don't worry, it's everything's safe. My lawyer made up the paperwork, and we're like, all right, cool. My lawyer read it over, everything's cool, and we signed it.
Okay. Well,
we're actually managed by a guy named Doc McGee for a while. Do you remember that guy?
Yeah, I think I do. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he managed like Bon Jovi and Cinderella and Motley Crue, all the bands we ever wanted to be. Right. And he was actually really cool until he assigned us to our day to day guy, and the day to day guy's name was Snake. And I was like,
his name was Snake.
Yeah. And I was like,
that's a roadie's name. What's he doing?
He was actually the guitar player in Skid Row.
Oh, okay. So, well, he's very used to being ripped off himself then.
Yeah. So it was like normal for him. But everybody was super nice. It's just, we just figured out, look, we'd rather keep the money and do a lot of the stuff. Basically, now we do everything on our own.
Right. And thus, you get to keep your publishing. You don't have to.
And we put out the records ourselves. We outsource everybody, just like the record label does. We just pay for it on our own, and then we, reap the rewards of it. But in the beginning, when we signed Universal Republic and did our first two records, it was important for us to get into that machine to be disseminated across the globe. Yeah. So it cost a lot of money to do it, but it was well worth the investment. To brand our name.
We had a similar thing because our first two records were on Atlantic, and then after that they're all sort of various different independent structures that are all based in the UK. And what I noticed was like with the independent ones, because they're outsourcing as you are to find like rock based promotions teams and things like that. Yeah. It doesn't matter who you're signed to outside of the majors, you always end up working with the same team because it's the same lot of people.
It's all the same shit.
Yeah.
And it's cheaper.
Yeah, and it's cheaper. That's cheap.
But the only thing is you need the capital to do that. And luckily we're able to, we make enough money to where we can, allocate certain, funds to what we need for release. And also our distributor is The Orchard, and they contribute too as well. So we have a business deal with them, and they're a great company.
Cool. I wanted to ask you a question about your offstage and onstage persona. What I've noticed about you guys is, and I think the reason why it resonates and works internationally is because it's very, very difficult to see where the differences are. You know what I mean? I feel like you've really lent into being Michael Starr, the Michael Starr that we know and love from, from treading the boards and singing into the microphone. It's the same guy, isn't it?
It really is for me. Once I put this outfit on, right?
Yeah.
Everything changes for me. There's an offstage persona that is basically just, when you're walking around with other humans in a normal grocery store, I can't be Michael Starr. Hey, suck my dick, or hey, you got a great pussy, come on, When we're on stage, it's different, There's a part of us that you've been around us. We just are sarcastic fucking guys. And the banter doesn't end on stage. The banter goes on all the time. And sometimes it goes on so much that we have to tell ourselves, can we just not do any sarcasm and just talk seriously right now, Because we've gotten through a lot of things, emotional trauma between one another with sarcasm, when shit sucks and the bus breaks down or the driver takes you to Canada when you're not supposed to go in an international area, and one of the guys has drugs on him and no fucking passport, those kind of things, you got to be serious.
Yeah. Okay. At that point,
we got off a ferry at one point, and one of our our monitor guy got nailed and got thrown in jail. So we had no monitor guy for the next show.
Where was that again?
I think it was like coming from Finland into Sweden or something. I forget exactly what the route was, but we just got off the ferry. They had dogs out there and he had fucking pipe and weed and he got busted.
Oh, but that's partially decriminalized now. I always think that's an overreaction.
Yeah, weed's fine now. You can travel with weed, just not fentanyl. Damn it.
Yeah, I know.
God, I love that fentanyl. You never know what's going to happen.
That's it. It's the peril. It's the,
Fentanyl is kind of like mushrooms, except you could die. Mushrooms you get a bad trip or a good trip.
So a little while ago, I did an episode about James Hetfield because he did an interview where he was talking about the intensity and the joy of being on stage and how like he commands these enormous audiences and then he goes home. And he sits on he feeds the dogs and takes the bins out. And he talks about how difficult it is to sort of cope with the difference of, the differing experiences of being James Hetfield.
I'll tell you what, you know what my mom and I do now? Whenever I leave for tour, she'll always call me the next day. Oh my God, the toilet's clogged or this light bulb went out or the car's got a flat tire. And so we decided to make a list of all the shit that's happened whenever I leave for tour. And we're going to it's amazing. It's just so much stuff you never would even believe. So when I get home, I'm washing cars. I'm taking trash out. I paint, not like art, but like a wall, I do laundry. I put on my shoe one at a time, just like everybody else.
Okay. So, but that's but you're talking about that being a coping mechanism, aren't you? So when you come off, you're actually looking forward to these menial tasks.
Well, yeah, because it makes me feel like I'm a part of society. When you're on tour, it's a whole different world. It's like a camping trip with all your buddies. And eventually, you got to go home and have some normalcy. At least I do. I like to equal out, go to the grocery store. That's why on tour, I do a lot of Walmarts. I do a lot of mall shopping. And I just like to be around other people, I love the band. Don't get me wrong. I love the crew. They're great. Love the fans. But I also like other people too as well. So I'd like to, just enjoy my life as much as possible. Because, dude, I know you've heard this before. And I heard it on Instagram a couple of days ago. And it really resonated with me. It's I can see the road behind me. It's a long road behind me. But the one ahead of me is shorter. So the stuff that I do in my life now may have more meaning for me, So I just try to enjoy what I like to enjoy. So I do like going home. I like going hiking where I hike all the time. I don't know if you know our producer, Jay Russin. I don't know if you remember
him. Jay pretty well, actually. I bumped into him at I think it was at one of the Taylor Hawkins tribute shows, actually.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, him and I hike all the time. And, I miss hiking with him and I hike by myself, but I make a lot of phone calls. I have a lot of friends that I'd like to talk to and check in with and just keep my feet on the ground, because the illusion that happens on the road can fuck with your mind. At least for me, I just think, I can't go wrong, man. This shirt's awesome. Everybody loves me, And the reality is, no, not everybody, dude. Those people that bought tickets, they love your band. But at the end of the day, you're just a fucking another human being on the planet. So don't be an asshole and fucking be a service somehow. Yeah, I remember I called my buddy, a really good friend of mine. I was really nervous to go on stage. And he said to me, he goes, "Hey, asshole, it's not about you. You're there to be a service to those people who bought tickets. Go give them your show and be of service to them. Let them have a good time." And that whole transaction perception switch really made it more fulfilling to me, and sometimes I'll be on stage, Justin, I'm singing and I look at the audience and they're having a great time and I feel like I'm doing what he told me to do, and I just look up and I just say thank you, because man, it's a blessing to be able to do this shit. Not everybody gets to do what we do. Mm-hmm. And I don't take it for granted, because it can go away like that.
Yeah, That's really interesting, because that's actually something that James Hetfield said as well. I think he's got people that tell him that, you know, you're here to provide a service, don't be an arsehole kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I always think it's the other way around. It is be an arsehole, because the part of it for me is like, they want to see that in you. You know, I think if there's too much, you know, performative gratitude in what you're doing, you lose edge.
Right.
And I know you've...
Your titties! Fucking make out, get naked!
You've got edge. I think it's like, your whole thing is like, I think you're pretty punk, you know. You're a bit like me. I'm a bit like that too. And there's the right amount of healthy, not disdain for your audience, but you've got to play with them in a way that makes it edgy.
Yeah. I mean, out of anybody that I've talked to, you understand exactly what we do. We do take the piss out of everybody. But we do that to one another, and that's just who we are. But there's also a space in there for me, and all the guys feel this way. It's, you know, you have to have some sort of realness in there. You know, if we were just four actors who got together and cut jokes and sang dirty songs and couldn't play our instruments, I don't think people would enjoy it as much. But we do take pride in being good at our individual instruments and performing them well. So there's an honesty in that. And then the other comedy and the fun and the fucking ball busting and making fun of people are like, all right, that's Steel Panther. Yes. You know? And I think that if you can connect with people on a human level and then take the piss out of them, it's much better.
Yeah. The jokes land harder for a start.
I think so too. I mean, fuck. I know, I liked it.
Yeah.
When I saw Van Halen, David Lee Roth did the same shit. He was fucking funny, but he connected with the people. And he fucking took the piss out of it and laughed. And Eddie shredded, and it was the best show ever.
Yeah. Amazing. Oh, by the way, do you remember that the Taylor Hawkins stuff when I was going to try and get you to do my gig for me? Do you remember
that? I do remember.
I should... I'm really glad that I was talked out of giving it to you, but you would have smashed it.
Well, I appreciate that. And you did a great job.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
It was amazing. I love I don't want to say anybody, but it's so nice to see you go do who you are within the song. Instead of going, all right, I'm going to pretend I'm David Lee Roth. Wow. You know, it just wouldn't have fit. You know what I mean? It was great how you did it. Awesome. I told you that already.
Yeah, you did. I just wanted to hear you say it on camera, that's all.
But I really wish you would have let me do it. Done it.
I should have let you do it. I think it would have been better if you'd have done it, but you know, in the end, I had to do it. Some enthusiasts have written some questions for you.
Ooh, I love these kind of questions.
Okay, so here's... All right, okay, so the first one... Okay. What's the difference between, and bear in mind, they've put like inverted commas, comedy or spoof rock band and a real one? Isn't every rock and roll band just a performance of some sort? Do you even classify yourselves as a comedy band?
Well, I know Billboard does. And for all you youngins out there, Billboard is a magazine that used to record, or still does, record sales. And that's how they develop their charts, right? So for us, every single record we've put out, and I'm not trying to be cool, but it's exciting, we've had a number one comedy album for every record we put out.
Wow.
On Billboard, which is, we're actually going to get some plaques made because we're fucking
excited. I'm proud of you guys.
It's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, so that's cool. And as far as like the whole parody thing and joke band, real band, you can come watch us play and make the decision for yourself. Are we a joke band? Like I said before, are we four actors trying to play instruments? No, we're actual musicians who play in a band, and we have chosen to sing about funny shit. Basically, what we're doing is we're taking the veil off of all the innuendos and just fucking talking about what everybody thinks anyways. You know, just open, honest, full throttle, fucking lyrical craziness. I mean, some of it's really over the top, But, you know, as far as like the onstage banter in between songs, yes, we crack jokes. And that's what we want. We want you to fucking laugh, escape reality, have a good time, and just enjoy yourself. Because at the end of the day, that's what that's what a rock show does for me when I go see a band play, especially if they're making you laugh. You make me laugh when I watch you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen so many. I mean, James Hetfield, speaking of him, we opened up for them, and he's out there. He's going, how many people bought our Saint Anger record? Like, I know nobody. That's a fucking joke, right?
Yeah.
So are they a real band or are they a fake band? You know, who fucking knows, dude? He's a funny guy. It's okay. Yeah. And look, there's been so many guys who lose their hair and fucking wear extensions or plugs or whatever they want to enhance their hair. That's why I got some new extensions.
But you're extending it from like the middle of the hair to the down to your nipples and doing like the mermaid vibe. You're not interfering with this area here. So that's admirable, not really. You know, that's karma, I think. You know?
I think that
spoof and comedy thing, like for our band, we've always tried to put one leg in each, and it's actually been quite detrimental sometimes, because then people who like don't believe it to be a joke and they take it so like as the real, you know, emotionally resonant stuff, and they love it, and there's always a slight suspicion that we're conning them somehow, and then the people who think it is a joke band reject it completely.
Well, you know how it is. There's going to be people that love your band. They go see you, and then they're mad because you didn't play their favorite song. You can't win with everybody, and you just do the best you can. And that's why we don't change what we do, because not only do we love doing what we do, we're not going to change because people want us to change. This is who we are. If you like us, cool. Get on the train and go for a ride. If you don't, fuck off. Just go listen to something else. It's no big deal. If you're offended by what we say, don't listen.
Do you remember that first record when you guys were asking me to sing do a duet with you on one of them? And and I remember going, yeah, that's awesome, great, can't wait. And then I saw the lyrics and I was like, what? what is this? And I was like, I don't think I was offended by it, but I was just kind of like, I couldn't believe that you were doing stuff that was that in your face, you know what I mean? Because I thought with the talent and the ability, you know, that you obviously all have, I thought you had an opportunity to do something which would really kind of pull that kind of rock and metal back from the brink of extinction once again, and then go super mainstream with some huge hits. I thought you'd just fucking take over and be like that band.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
But you just decided not to do that, and you decided to do stuff that was going to make it almost impossible to get on the radio. And already, that was like 15 years ago, and it's already kind of like a possibility that you might alienate, you know, just culturally isolate yourself and maybe get yourself cancelled before cancellation was even a thing, you know.
You know, it's weird. That first record, first of all, we were trying to get a record deal years ago, and we just never could. And once we started writing about what we wanted to write about and how we wanted to portray ourselves, we got signed. And I'll never forget the first, we're in Universal Republic, and we're in New York, and we're talking to the president of the label who signed us. And he's like, so what are you guys singing for the first single? I was like, Eyes of a Panther. It's the cleanest song. We'll get on the radio. I think it will be a really good intro to all the dirty, right? And he goes, fuck that. I think it should be Death Album Metal. And I was like, all right. And so we did it. And here we are. Thanks to him.
So ballsy. It really was. That's what I mean about the punk stuff, really. Because, you could have done anything you wanted, really. You know, you could have taken influence from any of the things that you've covered for all those years.
Yeah, he was the best dude, man. He let us record whatever we wanted for the record. He didn't approve it or anything. He just said, where's the songs? We sent them to him. We said, great. Did the artwork, and he put it out.
Wow. And was that a guy that came to see you in the residency shows? So he knew what he knew about what the community was likely to look like.
Yeah, exactly. They had an office in Hollywood, and he said he would drive by the Key Club and notice this line. And we used to have a huge billboard, like 60 by 40 billboard on the side of the Key Club.
Is that the one where you're in a car? Is that and then you were holding the mic? Because I always used to say to you, why have you got a microphone in that picture? I don't know.
It was that particular banner was for a JVC ad we did. So I think that was a JVC mic they were trying to do. I don't know. I don't forget. But he saw the line out there, and then he came in and met with us and said, hey, I want to sign you guys. And that was it.
Amazing. That's so cool.
Didn't happen overnight, though. That's after 10 years of playing every Monday night on the Strip, just to let everybody know out there.
Okay, here's another fan question. What do you think makes a great rock show and a great performance?
Well, I have to say it starts with the lights, because if it's really dark, it's not as exciting. It's a different vibe, right? So our lights are generally, when we have a LD, which is a technical name for a light guy who pushes buttons, we like to have it super bright and super white with lots of reds and yellows. So it's really exciting looking. And I think also costumes are really important, right? Now, these are just like small little fundamentals that go into the whole soup, I guess you would say. And the costumes are important. And then the music's important. And I think I would say that Satchel and I are like two lead singers. Like, I'm a lead singer and he's a lead singer. And we both are talking to the audience, and we're both engaging with the audience with our really sexy charisma, man. And I think that that's really important, to connect with people one-on-one and actually look them in the eye and talk to them, not stare at your shoes and look up at the sky, but engage them. And I think, to me, that makes me feel like I'm a part of the show, and I like being a part of something. It makes me feel good.
Yeah. And no two shows are the same when you do that, because you're reacting to what's happening in the room as well, aren't you? So, you know.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's what makes our shows, I think, special for people who repeat our shows, come and see us several times in a row. It's because, you know, we do different things in between songs. You know, we do have an outline that we work from, but the crowd dictates what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
Usually a girl.
Yeah, okay. So there will usually be a girl that dictates the nature of it's the dialogue, isn't it? It's between you and
definitely nature of the dialogue. And then we'll get them on stage, and whatever happens, sometimes we'll get two girls on stage and you never know what's going to happen. So it can be really fun.
Yeah.
And we also get other people up to jam with us too, all the time.
Yeah. But you used to do that in the residency too, didn't you? There was always whoever was in town seemed to come up, didn't it?
Yeah. Whoever's famous. We're like, we want you on stage so we can get more popular.
Yeah. Here's another one from the fan people. Do you struggle with vulnerability in any way? I, Dan, this fan, often cringe when I hear overly soppy songs, and when I'm too real with my own music, I sometimes feel very uncomfortable. Is writing more fun or silly songs just what you enjoy, or is getting deep also strangely uncomfortable for you?
Well, you know, we have a couple deep songs on our new record. And I think you premiered one of them called 1987.
Yeah, I thought that was really moving. I was really surprised about how emotional that song made me. I really thought that was you guys going up a level, actually, in terms of the putting, like, because it showed, like, you weren't just taking the piss out of everybody and everything like you normally do in a great way, obviously, but it was actually really showing some genuine like affection for this, you know, genre or subgenre that's all but dying, you know.
Yeah. It's been really, really fun to play it. live.
Yeah.
And there's another song called Ain't Dead Yet that's basically about it. It's about getting older as a rocker and what it's like. You know, there's some humorous lines in there, but I mean, at the core of it, it's pandemic driven, dude. You know, the pandemic really brought out some nostalgia for us, because you're sitting around worrying about your livelihood, worrying about your family, worrying about the world, all that stuff. And you really start thinking about the past and your life and what's to come. And you have a lot of fond memories of when the world was normal and all that stuff. And to me, and Satchel, obviously, because Satchel writes all the music and the lyrics. You know, when he sent over 1987, I was like, holy shit, it got me emotional. And I couldn't wait to record it, because I just love the lyrics in it. It's just so fitting. It just brought me back to being in high school. And so I think to answer that question, being vulnerable on stage is, fuck, man, I'm vulnerable on stage, even singing about pussy. You know, I mean, it's a vulnerable subject, you know.
Yeah. Makes you weak at the knees.
But singing 1987 and Ain't Dead Yet is different. And I think the crowd really digs it, man. They really like the fact that for them, I guess it would be like, oh, they're getting more real or whatever. But honestly, it's just a reflective song. It's basically, 1987 is just a love story from a year that heavy metal peaked, and then 4 years later, it was gone and never to return.
I love, I always think about 1987, because I think I might have done an episode which was 87 versus 80, was it 83 or 84, which I thought was, maybe 84 was another great year.
Yeah, oh yeah, Van Halen, 1984 came out, it was a great year.
Yeah, that's an amazing year, but also I think Reckless, Bryan Adams' record was done, and Foreigner 4, or was that 83?
Oh yeah.
You know, there's a couple of amazing years in the 80s for that stuff. So you reckon that, I want to go back to that thing that we talked about when you come off tour and then you have a list of tasks that need to be taken care of, so that you're constantly in service to something or somebody. Is that one of the things, because I think before, when I was kind of doing big touring, I found myself trying to keep the experience of or like a semblance of the experience going when I was at home. So like the late nights, everything apart from the music, I tried to take into my everyday life, you know. And then I'd go back and meet the band again after like a week of being at home, and they'd be like, have you slept? And I'd be like, Who keeps track of that, you know? And I'd be like, what? Why? They'd be like, why are you green? Why is your skin green? You know? And I'd be in a really bad way. It never occurred to me that I could do other stuff back then. And I think actually being famous and actually being, you know, having the opportunity to do the things that we do, you know, as you said before, not everybody has the chance. And you have to be grateful for it, but you also have to acknowledge that it's a kind of trauma, you know, to experience, you know, your perception of yourself changes to a degree where you find yourself, one might find oneself self-medicating in a certain way. Yeah, it does happen. I mean, I know that this is, you have no idea what I'm talking about, but you've got all this to look forward to.
It's so true. I mean, really so true. And it's really, okay, how do I say this? I'm so used to talking one-on-one about this particular thing, but how can I say it let me just say this. What we do on stage is a show, right?
Right.
It's a show. And when the show is over, the show is over. Now, I could go backstage and go, hey, man, give me a fucking beer, man. Yeah, fuck, you need something signed or, you know, whatever the fuck. No, man, you're off stage. That's it. That persona of being a rock star on stage, it's fucking over. You're a normal human being and you're dealing with normal people. And, finding that line, you know, you can get lost in the illusion that, oh, yeah, man, I'm a fucking rock star and I'm going to get my dick sucked every night and do blow. Fuck yeah. It's really fun. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, can't sustain that kind of lifestyle. There's no way. I mean, I tried. I just couldn't do it. So I only do cocaine. I only do cocaine during the guitar solo now. But when I get when I get home, man, I honestly, I just want to be with the people that I love, and my, and that's, those are my roots. That's my reality in my life. What I do for work is I go do a show, you know, and that you have to, I need to keep that separate.
Yeah. I think it takes a certain,
once it starts going like this, it affects everything over here. So, you know, there's a fine line. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I love to rock out and meet people at Starbucks when I'm home. It's fucking great. It's a good feeling to have somebody come up and go, I love your band. That feels amazing. But I can't build self-esteem from that. My self-esteem has to come from somewhere else, of like being a service or doing something right or doing something that's helpful or being a service or replacing a light bulb.
Yeah, maybe it's as simple as that.
It is simple, man. And plus, dude, you've I don't know if you've done this, but there's a lot of women out in the world, and it's fun to get lost in that, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I see. I hear what you're saying.
But at the end of the day, it's, you can get lost in a guy too. So you just have to be careful.
I was going
to
say that there are people in the world that aren't necessarily women as well. There's all sorts, just right. But then that's the type of addiction as well, isn't it? I mean, if you're going to get lost in anything at all that makes you feel differently, isn't that's a kind of addiction that, which is probably not healthy, I would say.
No, it's not. You have to be careful, man. I mean, I love pizza, but I'm not going to eat it every fucking day, you know?
I have tried that. You know, going back to the fat shaming stuff that we were talking about earlier.
Do I look fat?
No. No, you look gorgeous. I mean, glorious. Sorry. I was going to do a thing on Instagram, which I've just, based on what you said to me earlier, I'm not sure if I'll be allowed to do it, but on Thursdays I was going to do Thin Jussie Thursdays, which would be a collection of photographs from the period of my career when I was unusually thin and everybody thought I was dying of AIDS. And then I was going to do like Fat Jussie Fridays, where I was trying to eat pizza every day and had loads of cocaine, bloat, and, you know, my face was just basically a sphere with some eyes drawn on the front of it, and actually on the sides of it, and
hey, you know what I suggest? Hey, just change the word fat to chubby.
Oh, chubby's okay?
Yeah.
But I wondered if it's okay if I'm not fat shaming, if I'm just saying about myself. Does that make it okay?
You know, the thing about the Instagram violations or community guidelines is it's such a broad stroke that it really boils down to whether they like you or not, or you've bothered somebody. So I think that I may have ruffled some feathers with somebody who keeps reporting me. I don't know, but.
Oh, okay. So somebody's got a bee in their bonnet about that particular lyric, perhaps.
Maybe, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say.
That is the idea of music, though, isn't it? You're supposed to polarize people, aren't you? You're supposed to inspire some sort of reaction, whether it's good or bad.
I think so. Fuck yeah, you should. Yeah. At some point. Can I play a little bit of the song?
Oh, that's man. Please do.
Okay, so this one's called Ain't Dead Yet. I'm just going to give you a little taste of it, all right? I'll give you the first verse and the chorus, and then I'll stop playing. Okay, so check it out. Here's how it goes. I'm a little worse for wear, and I'm losing all my hair, and my six-pack became a kid, but the girls don't seem to care. Can't shoot the jizz no more. It just dribbles onto the horn I just met, but I ain't dead yet. There you go, buddy.
Wow. It's gorgeous. Love that. That is really lovely.
And it's I haven't played guitar in the band at a show since 2011. So it's 2012. It's really exciting for me.
Wow. It's fantastic.
I love playing guitar.
Yeah. And you're good at it as well. Before we started recording, you were doing some licks and some riffs.
I can do some finger tapping, some whammy bar stuff, some squealies.
Wow. Yeah. That's brilliant. You're probably better than me at the squealies. So how long have you been doing, how many bands were you in before you started working with these guys?
Oh, that's a great question. I just went down my own selfish rabbit hole the other night on YouTube. So my very first band was a band called First Cause. I was 16. I wrote all the songs, had a bunch of like four people in the band, and we would play backyard parties and kegger. In other words, we would buy a keg, get a friend's house, set up a stage, sell, charge $5 to get in, play four songs, cops would come, shut us down, and we'd take all the money and finish the keg. That was the party. And then the band after that was a band called Nightfall, which was a cocaine dealer and another guy who had his parents had money. And we would play all over Orange County. We had our own music and we never got signed, came really close. Then I moved up to LA and I joined a band called Long Gone. And from that band, we put out a demo. We almost got signed, but we didn't get signed. And then I met Satchel, and him and I started working on stuff. But then while we were doing that, we all were still doing other things. And I joined another band called 7% Solution with this guy, Mitch Perry on guitar and Sean McNabb on bass. And we almost got a deal, but we didn't. So Satchel and I kept writing songs. And then I ended up playing in a Van Halen tribute band for a number of years. And Satchel and I did that a couple of years together. And then Steel Panther came about.
Wow.
And we're talking like 30 years ago. This is, I'm pretty old, Justin. I think I'm way older than you.
I don't think you are.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think you are.
You're 47, right?
No, I'm 48. As of.
You're 48. Of. Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah. I'm way older than you.
No, you can't be. Oh man, yeah. Because I saw you posting some stuff on your Instagram, which, by the way, has become a really uplifting area of the social media.
Thank you.
I love watching you on there because it doesn't feel like you're trying to sell anything. You're just kind of like being all positive. It's almost like spiritual guru level stuff. You know?
Should I be more negative to be cooler? I don't know. I really truly just like. Man, I guess I like to film myself. Satchel makes fun of me all the time. He's like, oh, you make another hiking video? I'm like, yeah, I am. I like it. You know, I got to tell you something about social media. For all the negative shit you hear about it, for me, it really gives me the ability to connect with people that are like-minded. You know, because I have my own algorithm set up that they do for you. So I get all the content I wanted, like a lot of Van Halen, a lot of you guys, a lot of all the rock bands I follow. But then I also get to connect with the people who are Steel Panther fans. And it's really, it's cool. It's a really nice way to connect and get to know a lot of people. And I don't feel so alone when I'm on the road.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
Yeah, it feels like you're doing it for all the right reasons, actually.
Yeah, some people say social media is really bad for you. I don't think it's bad for you. I think it's just the way you use it.
Yeah. It's like, I suppose one, some people say like one and a quarter glasses of wine is good for you. Creativity.
Man, I don't know about you, Justin, but I never drank for the effect. I mean, I never drank because it tastes good. I drank for the effect.
Yeah.
I don't know how people like pour wine and go like this. Ooh, this tastes good. Fuck that, man. Wine is fine, like Ozzy says, but whiskey's quicker.
Oh, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, right? He's right about that. But I've been watching Hannibal, you know, the really stylish serial killer series with Hugh Dancy and Mads Mikkelsen from years ago. And every time Mads Mikkelsen has a sip of wine, he really like... You can see him, I don't know, because he's a great actor. You can really see him savoring the moment. And then for me, and I haven't drank alcohol for, It'll be 17 years this year in August. Oh my.
How do you even exist like that?
I don't know how I do it. This isn't living.
This is not living.
This isn't living.
But hey, you know, I do the same thing when it comes to cocaine. I just sniff it really lightly just so I'm a connoisseur.
Just to appreciate the essence of it, yeah.
I got a question for you. How did you sing when you were doing that?
I was going to ask you the same thing about Botox, actually, because I wonder...
I'm going to tell you about Botox, okay? So just, you can answer your question. Let me answer that because I don't want to forget it. So, okay, so Botox, it started where you would just get it right here, right? To get rid of your lines on your forehead, right? And then they started doing it around your eyes to get rid of crow's feet. Cool, right? And then they started doing some here and here. And then as you get older, your neck will get this line going up here that you see all the time, right? And they started going, hey, we can relax that line. Just shoot a little Botox in there. And I remember going, ah, fuck it, I'll try it. Because I'll try anything because I'm a fucking, I'm a dumpster for drugs. So I tried it. They shot it in there and I couldn't sing. It fucked up my voice. It fucked up the muscles in here and I couldn't control. I was so sharp and flat all the time. It was fucked. It lasted for like, you know, like 3 or 4 weeks. I never done that again. So don't do it on your throat.
That's what I was wondering. Do you remember, you probably never saw that, but I did an episode about John Bon Jovi and his, you know, because some of the footage of him singing lately is pretty rough. It's hard to watch, you know. And I was trying to sympathize and I imagined, I was kind of alluding to the fact that if somebody of a certain age and, you know, whatever, decided to do something like what you've described there, I can imagine that that would be a thing that might lead to, you know, I'm not accusing anybody of anything directly, but you know,
it sounded like he was sick.
Okay, it's more like it's more like in a different.
I know, dude. I watched it over and over again, and I was it broke my heart. Like just watching it, because I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I ended up getting a note in my voice, and I couldn't sing, and I had to like go to the doctor. I've had the same voice doctor for 25 years. I went to him, he goes, yep, you got a note. Don't talk or sing for 2 weeks and come back to see me. So I had to completely be quiet, not sing. And this is the middle of doing a record. So I go back and he goes, yep, you got a note. We're going to have surgery. I'm like, fuck, man. So I had to be quiet up until the surgery and then I had to be quiet for 4 weeks after the surgery. And that feeling of not knowing whether you're going to be able to sing again is... I basically had a nervous breakdown. I was like, oh my God, I'm never gonna be able to sing again. What are the guys gonna do? Fuck. You know, thinking about everything, not only what I love to do, but everybody else that relies on their livelihood and my support would be affected by it. So when I heard, obviously John Bon Jovi's rich enough to stop singing today and never worry about money. But when I saw that, it just made me feel, I felt horrible for him. Like, because, I mean, that's who he is. He's a singer. And not to be able to sing, it's almost like cutting off your penis. Really.
Yeah.
So you can't urinate or anything.
Yeah, anything. You can't. Or just
bloody stump. You just have to. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. Now people are cutting off their penises because they want to. So I'll use a different reference. It's like cutting off your arm. No, that's not a good one. Yeah. If you're a guitar player, cutting off your left arm. How about that?
Yeah. Okay. That's it. And then sewing it back on and wondering if it's going to stay there.
Right. Just like Rick Allen. It doesn't work. And I don't know. I just felt bad for him. So I was hoping that maybe he just had like maybe some laryngitis going on or something.
No, it wasn't that though. It wasn't.
No?
No. Laryngitis sounds completely different. And also the way you express... You can see it on a person's face when they're trying to sing through laryngitis or pharyngitis or whatever it is. You know, it's a different kind of pain. Or maybe the Botox was stopping him from expressing the pain visually. I don't know.
Yeah, it sounded like either his vocal cord has split in two, one of them, or he had a huge note on it or something. It's weird. Is he still singing now or is he done?
I don't know. Probably, I don't know. I think he was going to take some time off last I heard, but
and same with David Coverdale, right? He stopped performing now.
I think, yeah, he was doing a farewell tour, where you know some of his singing was bolstered by other folks. There's no shame in that, but I suppose it's that thing that you're talking about with the garden, you know, having to go and do gardening for the rest of your life when, well, you know, you're born to
he's
rot.
He's got enough money to go do gardening for the rest of his life. But when is the right time to stop? When is it responsible as a performer to stop doing something because you can't do it anymore, but you still think you can? When is that time?
What about, I think there's a... I think the correct answer is, oh, that's really hard. But you know,
what when you can't stand on your head in front of the drum, bass drum anymore.
When I can't do that, see, if I couldn't do those things, I don't think I should be doing darkness. You know, but there's no reason why I wouldn't be able to transition into something a little bit more folky and a bit less headstandy, you know, and do something like what Robert Plant has done. You know, that sort of, you know. Change direction a bit.
Yeah.
You know, because he...
Yeah, I think I just want to just keep on rocking, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, this has been my dream my whole life, you know, to be in a heavy metal band. So even when I was 14, this was my dream. And it took a long time for my dream to happen, but it's happened, and I don't ever want to let it go. I love it. Ever. That's a good song right there. Never want to let it go.
Yeah. How do you think your voice has changed since over the years, though? I mean, does it differ in a good way? Because I think sometimes, like, a voice that does what you do, it needs a few years to get into that sweet spot where the great's there and, you know, the warmth of it. And you can't be sexy and young. You just can't do it. As a man, you've got to be of a certain age to be sexy, I think.
Yeah, I think the sexy thing is gone. It's left the building, but it's okay because you have to learn. I don't know if I've done this, but in my mind, here's how I think. I think you have to learn to be who you are as you get older. So if you are comfortable with yourself and you know who you are as a human being, I think it's easier to perform on stage. At least it is for me. I don't know if I've mastered that. I don't know. But I'm just saying, like, my voice is changed a lot. And I do sing, like, I listened to the first, I don't know if you've ever done this, but I listened to the first record that we did like a couple months ago. And my voice sounds completely different to me than it does now. And the way I'm singing, the way I'm reaching the notes is different. I look back and I think the technique I had on our first record, my technique's better now from singing so much. And so I think that, I don't know, I would like to think that I've gotten better at what I do, to be honest with you.
I felt the same way about my thing. Whenever I go back and listen, I can hear myself struggling on the first couple of records and finding singing flat and sharp in places. But the thing about those records is that my voice is way more exciting because of that, because I can hear myself looking for ways to get to those notes, you know, and that's part of the charm of it. And it's like I never sang it the same way twice, really, in those days. But I do now because I've had to do so much touring with those songs. They've evolved into things that I know how to do. Which is a little bit less exciting, but better.
Do you find that you, like for me, I listened, like, just for an example, our song, we have a song called Eyes of a Panther. I listened to the record, and then when I listened to the record, I try to go back and listen to the song's original recording so I can make sure I'm not developing these weird habits of changing shit. And I still find that I still am changing stuff. And I have to relearn, not relearn it, but I got to relearn it. I have to relearn it like it was on the record. So when people hear it, because their only reference is the record. So when they hear us live, I want it to be like the record. So I have to relearn it because you can develop really, like, I call them David Lee Roth habits, where you just change the melody lines, you know, over years and it kind of morphs into a different song, you know? I don't know if you experienced that, but.
Yeah, that's happened to me. But I don't feel like I need to go back to the original thing. I feel like the definitive version of a song will be one performance that you've probably forgotten at some point, you know, between when, yeah, when you recorded it and,
oh, right,
and now. And that would be the one to try and use as a reference, really. Because it has to change, you know, just has to. And I don't think the songs are necessarily finished, especially if you just go in and, like, the first four times you sing them, that's actually, like, where you've got to take all of your comp take from to make that record. There might be,
yeah, I found, like, the stuff that I recorded early on, there's, you know, I would learn, like, I would write a song, or I would learn one of Satchel's songs, and I'd learn it, but I'd have to learn how to sing it in the studio. And then when we go out and do it, I've figured out how to sing everything the way I, technique-wise, and like, oh, I wish I would have did this here on the record, you know, because I think, you know, after I get used to singing it, I can venture out more in, with writing. And I just, there's some stuff I feel like I left on the table for some songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel the same way about us. Yeah. But do you think you'll do a Steel Panther live album? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, I'd love to do a Steel Panther live record. We have a DVD out that's a live one. It's called British Invasion. And, that's pretty cool. It's a video and it's live from a board, and we, you know, made it all sound killer. But it'd be really nice to do like a traditional, just a live record, because we don't have one. And I would like to have all the banter in there too as well, because I think that's really part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah, you guys would be able to do a proper one. Like some of those, most of those live rock albums, the newer ones you get, they're recorded every night with all the microphones over the course of a tour, and then they'll choose like the best example of each song, and it could be like one night it's in Birmingham, next night it's in Luxembourg or whatever, you know. So it's never really a true gig, but you guys would be able to do a real one, I think. We did a real one from a gig in Hammersmith, and that was actually when I had a polyp on my vocal cords, and it was at the end of a tour when I was really struggling, and I managed to get my vocal over the line. It was all right. There's a few bits where I'm sort of dropping out, but we didn't cut it back in because it's like, it's a live record. We want it to be proper.
Real.
But then, yeah, so, but in terms of leaving the banter, there's 8 minutes of it of me trying to hit a glitter ball with a plectrum. It's like, and it's not enjoyable to listen to, so some of it had to be edited out. But crucially, I think you guys would do it. You guys should do it all one night only one, because I think that's one really separates the men from the boys, that one does.
Yep, no overdubs at all.
Yeah.
Just all leave it done. Leave it as it is, man. Let it just happen. I think we could do it.
A bootleg,
yeah, bootleg record. That'd be cool. God, there's just so much footage of us on stage doing the first two songs of our set. And then all the other songs, there's no videos of them really. Not as much as the first two songs. So it'd be really cool to have a song other than Eyes of a Panther, you know, on Instagram. Be nice to have like the whole live show and video. I want to do a video too as well, because I think those are, the VHS needs to make a comeback.
Yeah, definitely. In the same way that vinyl has. Yeah.
Hey, our new record, we released it on cassette again.
Nice.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool.
That
was a big seller as well. We always do cassettes too. It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, we've only done it twice so far, and it's really cool. I got a whole box of them at home. They're like food stamps. Here, give me some food.
Yeah. And also, a great gift if you're struggling to think of what to get for distant relatives, you just send them a cassette.
Yeah, well, I have. I've done that before, and I've regretted it, but I've done it. Here's our new CD. Happy birthday.
Yeah, as long as you sign it, that's all right.
And sign it, too. Oh, my God. I love you, Dad. This is my new CD, bro. Go put that on your wall.
Oh, brilliant. I've got another fan question for you. Seeing how much touring Steel Panther has done in the last year, how does Michael Starr still sound so good? How does he keep the panther howling? I think he's asking you what you do before. How do you warm up? That's what he's asking.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll tell you one. I'll tell you one thing. I don't do. I don't drink while I sing, and I'll tell you why. Because when I did drink when I sang, I don't realize how hard I'm pushing and where my technique is, and it just makes it for the next night to be 100 times more difficult to sing. So, yeah, man. As far as like getting ready for a show, when we're touring, I probably won't really talk too much. You know, I mean, I'll still talk, but not as much. I like to talk, as you can tell. I keep cutting you off, but I talk a lot, so I have to be conscious of not talking a lot. And then I do a quick warm up before I go on, like just a few trills and scales, just to see what I'm going out on stage with. So I'll do like this test. It's just a quick. And you heard a little glitch in there, right? So that's where my problem would be right now if I were to sing. So I have to keep doing that over and over again until it's a clear shot all the way down, smooth transition from falsetto to full voice. And that's pretty much it. And I'll stretch out my knee and my hips because I'm old, and then I go out and rock.
Wow. How long does it take you to do those, the glide down? How many minutes do you reckon you spend on it?
Well, usually we'll get on stage 10 minutes before we go on, check our packs, check the tracks, check all the drums, make sure everyone's got their ears right, and then I'll start warming up. So probably like 5 minutes.
Wow, that's really short.
Well, you know, I mean, when you're on tour a lot, well, for me, when I'm on tour a lot and I'm singing and I'm using my voice a lot, I try not to sing until I have to. So, and that includes warming up, because warming up is basically singing without any words.
Yeah, true. And then, because I think I used to do it too much. Like I was doing an hour, or if I was worried about my voice, I'd do more than an hour. And then it never occurred to me that I was probably just making it more tired. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't realize it either until I had my surgery. I'm like, God, I got to just be chill on my voice. Because my doctor goes, look, you're older. This shit's going to happen to your voice. Take care of it. And no more ibuprofen. I don't know if you know what that is, but it's an anti...
Oh, what?
Ibuprofen, yeah. No more ibuprofen.
No more ibuprofen. No one's ever advised me that one before. Why? Because it's... Does it make you acidy or something and then acid comes up or...?
That is one of the side effects of ibuprofen. It does give you extra acid in your stomach. But he told me that it thins out your blood and it makes you more susceptible to like blood blisters. Does that make sense? So that's basically what's on your vocal cord when you get a node or a polyp. It's a breakage of a vessel, and it pops out. And if you keep singing on it, it turns into a callus. And then they got to cut it off and cauterize it.
Yeah. That's a question I was going to ask you about your procedure. Because when I had my polyp, they asked me if I wanted to have cold steel or hot laser. And I thought I'd go for the cold steel because otherwise the hot laser might cook all the other meat. And then I just have like a, you know what I mean?
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
What did you choose?
I think he did the laser on me.
Yeah, the laser. Wow.
Yeah.
He did the laser on me, and I trusted the guy. I trust him, obviously. And he did it right. And I'll tell you, after the surgery and I started singing, it was like I had a brand new voice. I didn't realize how long I was singing with a callus. And I had to relearn how to scream again because I was using that little bump on my vocal cord before it exploded even more to get a certain scream out. So I had to relearn how to do it. It's crazy.
So I think that's partly like when, because you can do like a whistle tone almost, can't you? Like a David Lee Roth, there's an overtone in your voice that you lean on for screams, and it's really like it's like a whistle note almost, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's and a falsetto whistle.
Yeah, because I used to be able to do that as a younger man, and then it just stopped.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if it's stopping for me, but I've been having trouble doing it on the very first song, and it's been freaking me out. Because usually it will happen at the beginning of a tour, and then it goes away, and I can do it. But yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's the end of the scream for me. I don't know.
Yeah, but I was talking to Elizabeth Giroff. You know who that is? She's the charismatic voice. She's a voice. She's an opera singer, and she does, you know, helps people with their voices and stuff, and analyzes voices. She said that when they put a camera down and then they look at the Mariah Carey sort of whistle tone thing, that's like what you're doing, but you know, in a totally different way. Apparently it's super constricted, and that bit that comes over the top of the vocal cords is almost covering it completely. So I think you'll get it back if you just, you know.
Maybe if I stop vaping for a while, maybe that will help.
Maybe that's like, try just cutting down on the vapes and then see if she did say, less vaping.
Fuck that. Caffeine, vapes, let's go.
Okay, yeah, well, you got to pick your battles, obviously. So no squeaking for you, only caffeine and vapes.
Still got it.
There it is. It's perfect.
Yeah, I got it. It's there.
It's like it never left. It's brilliant. This is the last question I got from the fans, right? I've got to ask, as I've always wondered, how does Steel Panther's songwriting process work? Is it a case of today we write a song about a glory hole, or does it happen more organically?
It does happen organically. Like I was saying earlier to you, that like we're very sarcastic human beings, and we joke around a lot. So we're like, we'll be like maybe on the tour bus or backstage just joking around, and we'll come across like something that we say to each other that we think is funny, and we're like, that'd be a good song. And then Satchel is the main songwriter of this band. He's a fucking genius, kind of like you, Justin. And he can write a song in a fucking day, and it's brilliant. And so we'll come up with an idea. Like, I remember the actual label said, you guys should do a song about Tiger Woods. Satchel's like, okay. Comes back the next day, he has a song called Tiger Woods. It's fucking great. And so we basically do the same thing with, you know, the shit that we come up with that we think is funny on the bus or on tour. And it's something that makes us laugh or makes us feel like it's going to be, I don't know, if it makes us laugh, then we feel like it's worthy, you know? So that's basically the song writing process. And then, you know, Satchel also has a very deranged mind. I don't know if you've ever heard him talk on stage, but the stuff he comes up with is like, oh my God, dude, I don't know if I can sing that. Like, we have a song called Friends with Benefits, and there's a lyric in there that says, you get a shopping spree in London, I get your turds inside my mouth. And I was like, okay, man, let's do it. You know, it's funny because now that we're playing it live, I'm totally desensitized by the lyrics of the songs. So I'm just, you know, I'm singing these songs about fucking chicks in the ass and fucking blowing loads all over their faces. And it's just like, and it's a ballad, you know, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. It's funny that because it never occurred to me that those things, I suppose it doesn't matter what kind of song it is, you will always become desensitized to the lyric. Like if you write a song about a divorce and it's a really heartfelt song and you're kind of like, you know, opening a box of emotions, and then the first couple of times you sing it, it hurts and maybe it moves you. Then after like a year of touring, you could just be talking about turds in your mouth. It would make no difference, you know. It's just sounds. It's just sounds. Isn't it?
That's so true.
That's one of the things that we should probably talk about. You and I are singers, and we've been talking about doing this for 100 years, but it needed a third party to make this happen, because we are two singers, and singers can't really be expected to do anything other than be singers.
Yeah, and look good.
Yeah, but there's that too, yeah. And so you have like...
we have to be engaging. We have to sing in key. We have to move on stage, and we have to carry the whole audience. Other than that, what else is there?
Yeah. So when we're not singing, I think we can't really be expected to be able to organize diaries, you know, keep a well-stocked kitchen, for example, car maintenance, none of those things, like the usual sort of, even if you're a male singer, as we undoubtedly are two of, even those kind of traditional sort of masculine activities, that they can't be left at our door. We've just got to be... We have to exist in the singer bubble, really. putting the bins out's all right. I think you can do that.
I don't know. That's not a big deal. I mean, the singer world bubble is the best bubble to be in, but it's also one of the hardest jobs next to the drummer.
Mm. Right.
You mean physically or emotionally, psychologically?
Physically, emotionally, all of it. It's not easy. I mean, dude, if you have a cold, it fucks up your voice. If my guitar player, Satchel, has a cold, doesn't fuck up his fingers. He just got a cold.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's really true. So we're obliged to live in a different way. I think singers who operate in these sort of mid to later, not to suggest the twilight, but, you know, like the autumnal period of our lives, and to still be out there doing this, we're obliged to live in a different way. We can't, I suppose it's going back to that thing that you said about you can't sustain the party vibes.
No, it's the same principle as working out. I mean, if you worked out every single day, your body will break down eventually. You got to give it a fucking rest. You got to rest up. You know, I'm never this guy. Oh, I can't do an early morning show because I need my rest for my voice. Fuck that, man. Just get up and fucking do the best you can.
Yeah.
All right.
Good for you.
Oh, but my voice is hurting now.
Yeah. Right. Should we call it a night? Mine is too. But anyway, you've been really gracious with your time. I really appreciate you.
I'm really glad I finally got to do this. I know we've been talking about it for several months, and it's finally happened, and I'm really excited to be a part of it. And I love what you're doing. I think it's really great.
Thanks, man. I think you're great. And you look great.
Thanks.
I love that star necklace. Is that something that you chose yourself because of your name being Star?
I got the star back in 1989 from a girl named Melanie. She was a super fan of one of my bands at the time. And she used to come to all our rehearsals, and she brought me this as a gift. And I never wore it. It just sat like in my room. And then one day I thought, fuck, I'll just put it on. And I put it on, and I haven't taken it off since. And it's been on the whole time.
She must be thrilled when she sees it around your neck like that.
I think she might have died. She was pretty old at the time. She was like 84 or something.
Oh, okay.
But she was amazing in bed.
Maybe she's smiling down at you from the heavens going, oh, finally you got around to wearing it after I died.
Yeah, or looking up from hell. You never know.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, good point, actually. Well, anyway, it's still a lovely, lovely garment, a lovely
thank you.
Adorned. It's the same one, too, and I've had it for years. It's really light, but it's really loud. It makes a lot of noise when I walk around.
Uh-huh. Does it ever get picked up by the microphone? Does Jay Rustin ask you to take it off when you're doing vocal tape?
Been on a lot of Steel Panther records. This sound right here.
Yeah.
I'm so old. That's too high a frequency for me to even detect.
You can't hear that shit. I can barely hear it.
Oh yeah. So what do you want to advertise? By the way, what are we plugging?
Oh, I would love to plug our new record. It's called On the Prowl. It's our sixth studio record, and it has songs like 1987 on it, Friends with Benefits, Never Too Late to Get Some Pussy Tonight. And I also would like to promote, if you want to join me on my Instagram, go to Michael Starr at Instagram and check me out. And also, Justin, we put out a new pedal. It's called the 1987 pedal.
Oh, did you? Who made that with you?
It's really cool. It's basically a delay and distortion pedal mixed together. And when you plug it in and you plug your guitar in and plug it in the amp and press the pedal, I'm not kidding. It sounds like Van Halen meets the Scorpions mixed with a little bit of Whitesnake, John Sykes on top. It's really rad. Yeah. Yeah, it's really cool. And if you go to steelpantherrocks.com, you can pick one up. They only cost $187 and they're really good pedals.
Brilliant. And 87, presumably because of the 87-ness of it. Yeah, that's brilliant. All right, cool. Do you know, you remember my theme tune, don't you, from earlier?
Yeah.
Do you want to sing it with me? Or you don't have to. But...
Yeah. Sing it for me one.
Okay. Justin Hawkins rides again. Again.
Justin Hawkins rides again. See, when you give me all these notes, I can't figure those out.
No obligation to get it exactly.
Maybe I'll have to write my own. Okay. See, I got it. Justin Hawkins rides again. And I don't know what note I'm in, but it doesn't matter because heavy metal fucking rules, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much for listening. Steel Panther's new album, On the Prowl, is out now, so make sure you give it a listen and get yourself down to a Steel Panther show. If you liked this episode, please feel free to leave us a review on Spotify or Apple, or share it on your Instagram stories or Facebook page. Everything you do helps. Nice one, guys. See you later. Okay.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.